Those are the members of the French National Assembly who earlier today got together in Parliament and had a moment of silence for the people who were killed and affected by the attack last week by the terrorists on the satirical weekly Charlie Hebdo. And after that moment of silence, a couple of them launched into La Marseillaise, which is the French national anthem, and the rest of them joined in as well. I actually saw a video of this on whatever the French equivalent of C-SPAN is, and you can see many of them tearing up and really feeling the impact of their voices all joining together. Of course, on Sunday in Paris, more than a million or a million and a half people lined the streets to march, to express solidarity across their country after this horrible incident that occurred in the offices of Charlie Hebdo, which, by the way, in just a few hours, when Wednesday dawns in France, will have a new issue ready to go. Unbelievable, considering that a dozen people who worked in their offices were gunned down. The remaining staff have gotten together and put together a new issue. And yes, it has the Prophet Muhammad on the cover, along with the words in French, all is forgiven. So we've seen a lot about this story over the last week or so, but I thought we'd get an interesting perspective on it today from a guy who is both a satirist and a Muslim. His name is Dean Obadallah. He's a comedian, and he's got his own XM Sirius radio show that's going to debut this Saturday morning. He's also a columnist for The Daily Beast and has been writing for CNN.com about this over the last few days. Dean, welcome to the Big 550.
Thanks for having me on, Paul. I appreciate it.
So I'm interested in your perspective on all of this as both a Muslim and as a satirist. These were people who were satirists who were attacked by extremist Muslims. Is there anything you take away from this personally?
Well, to me, I mean, it's certainly, as someone who makes their living using freedom of expression as a comedian, as a writer, as a radio host, you know, to me, there's really no boundaries to that. I think you, in the world of arts and the media, if you don't like something, you turn the channel. You don't look at it. You can, or you counter it with writing an article about it, or you can even do civil protest if you'd like. But violence, there's no place for that whatsoever. And, you know, so as a comedian and as someone in the arts, I look at it that way. As a Muslim, I can tell you absolutely there's no basis in Islamic faith for this. There's nothing in the Quran that says you can't depict the Prophet Muhammad. People have said this, that's not true. In the Hadith, which are the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad, there are references there that say don't depict any prophet, not just Muhammad, not Jesus or anyone. And when you look at the reasoning of it, it makes it clear why this person's actions were wrong. The reasonings were that they didn't want you to depict the Prophet so that Muslims wouldn't pray to prophets. It was obviously a reaction to Christians praying to Jesus Christ, images of Jesus. The whole thing about Islam is to pray to God. We don't pray to Muhammad. Muhammad's just a human being. He's not God. He's just a person who, you know, if you believe in the Islamic faith, was then through God gave him the Quran and revealed it to him over years, and he wrote the Quran. So, you know, what these people did, and it happens generally with terrorism, if you look beneath the surface, it's about a political agenda, and their agenda, it seems to be to get Al-Qaeda on the map again, to get Al-Qaeda better known, or at least to be able to get it better for recruiting and fundraising. And it's much more of a practical consideration using the faith and using this pretend outrage to cartoons that were really printed 2 years ago, where the real outrage was going on. Now, years later, these guys are going to avenge the Prophet Muhammad? No. It's not like they sat around going, one day we're going to do this. They had a meeting. And perhaps they really are working with Al-Qaeda.
Now, these people who have been publishing this satirical weekly, Charlie Hebdo, for several years, they're not just satirists. They're also provocateurs.
Yes.
They know what their standing has been with people who are offended by what they do and said, okay, well, you're offended by it. We'll just do more of that. And by the way, that's perfectly fine if they want to do that. But I'm curious about the people here in the United States who have gone after media outlets and others who have refused to show these cartoons, in some cases, including CNN, saying, you know what, we have to worry about the safety of our own people. And since we know that there are people who are extremists in their beliefs when it comes to this, who will kill because of those beliefs, we're going to err on the side of caution. What's your take on that?
Well, to me, and I wrote about it for CNN this week, freedom of expression goes two ways. One is I have the freedom to express my views on things, and I also have the freedom not to express my views on certain things. And there have been certain people who have challenged me on Twitter, mostly conservatives, frankly, sort of making it a litmus test for my commitment to freedom of expression, saying, well, why don't you make jokes about the Prophet Muhammad? Or why don't you tweet out pictures of Prophet Muhammad that some might find offensive? That's not freedom of expression. That's being forced. It's no different. I mean, it's not like the terrorists, but it's no different than people on the other side who might want to force you not to have freedom of expression. It's your choice. In the case of a big corporation, I mean, they're not in a vacuum. At CNN, I mean, Jeff Zucker has made a statement publicly that I read, and I've talked to my friends who work there. His concern, you know, it's a balance. Is it freedom of expression, or is he putting the lives of CNN employees in other parts of the world online? And, you know, that's a decision that they have to make in a responsible way, and I'm not going to second-guess that, because if I was a president of a corporation with employees around the world, it's not as if I don't print it, it's not going to get seen. That would be a different story.
Right.
You know it's going to get out there. The question is, should you do it or not? It's a tough call from that kind of human point of view. As an artist in a vacuum, I think absolutely. And I wrote about it for CNN. Every image of Prophet Muhammad should be uncensored, any comedic satire, and should be out there for people to see. And, you know, I think most people would just roll their eyes if they don't like it. And some do get offended, but even they will just be like, well, what can you do? Most people.
Aside from our agreeing that they have the right to, but not the obligation to print those things, I'm curious whether you're actually offended by the images at all. But before you answer, I'm going to make a guess here as to what your answer is. You're a comedian. I'm a talk show host. We've had people say so many things to us over the years that there's no limit to where you can go that is going to push us over the edge when it comes to offense. Would you agree with that?
You're 100% right, Paul. I mean, it would take, I don't even know what it would take to offend me at this point. I've been called horrible names, you know, on stage, off stage, on Twitter, and emails and articles, where your skin gets like an alligator, and you're really, and even, it's funny, because I interviewed a few Muslim comedians in the Muslim world, one in Egypt and Dubai, who both, I asked them, are you offended? And they go, no, we're not offended. You know, we're comedians. So the same thing, doesn't matter if you're a comedian in Egypt or Dubai, that's the case where they were, or comedians here. We go through so much, and also we value freedom of expression. It's so important. But, you know, some of this, and I'm talking specifically to the ones living in the Muslim world, freedom of expression is not the same as it is here in the United States. They don't grow up with that. I performed in the Middle East, and there's limits on your content as a comedian. You can't do jokes about religion, not just Islam. No jokes about Judaism or Christianity. No jokes about religion whatsoever on the stage. No jokes about sex, no jokes about politics of that country. That's generally the rules. It's not the law. It's just the rules of the producers who need to get a license from the government to have these shows. So as a comedian who's a guest there and being paid, you know, I'll be fine with their limits. The same thing if you do a corporate event in America, like a big company employs you as a comic to perform, they will tell you no sex, no politics, no religion. It's the same limitations. And it's kind of interesting, as a comedian, you must navigate through that. But in the Middle East, when you grow up in a world where the government has censored things which they find objectionable, or that people would complain about and find offensive, then your understanding of freedom of expression is different. Your understanding is that if it's not offensive, everyone gets to see it. If it's offensive, it should be blocked. We don't live that world in America. We have in our DNA, doesn't matter what my faith is, you know, my DNA as an American tells me freedom of expression must be defended. And as a former lawyer, it's something that, you know, I believe in from a legal point of view and a moral point of view.
You know, when it comes to the First Amendment and freedom of speech, I always tell people you misunderstand freedom of speech and the First Amendment if you believe that it means you can say anything you want anywhere with no consequences. Because if you actually believe that, go into work tomorrow morning and call your boss an a-hole to his face. Let me know how that works out.
And it's not going to work out well. And the other misunderstanding of freedom of expression or the First Amendment is that, you know, it applies in the private world. The First Amendment applies to government action. That's all that's about. Your freedom of expression. So if the government passes a law that says you can't say something, well, that's a violation of the Constitution. If your boss says you can't say these things if you want to work here, well, your boss can say that. You can't sue them unless you work for the government and say my freedom of expression was curtailed. That's life. That's the office place. They don't want cursing. They don't want sexual harassing comments. You know, that would be you would be able to do any of that if your boss could not limit what you can say at work. And we're used to that in the workplace setting. It's really when your employer is a government that's an issue. So, you know, tomorrow will be interesting how it comes out with the magazine and if there's much of a backlash. You know, people look at this like, oh, my God, these crazy Muslims are going to kill you for a cartoon. These are two men who did this. This is two people out of millions and millions who live in France who are Muslims. I mean, about 7% of the country is Muslim. It's not like there were hundreds and thousands of Muslims in the streets blowing things up or being outraged. This is much more a politically motivated attack than a religiously motivated attack, ultimately. And until I see something different, like if they made a video and they were to say, we did this for the Quran, and da-da-da, and I go, well, maybe it's true. But, you know, the more you hear it's about Al-Qaeda and the other guy who shot the people in the kosher store said it was for ISIS, those are political organizations that use Islam or use religion as a recruiting tool, and it's a very, very effective recruiting tool.
So how do you respond to somebody like Rupert Murdoch and others who on Twitter have been saying it's on moderate Muslims, which I'm sure you consider yourself, it's on you, Dean, to condemn and combat Muslim extremists?
You know, here's the truth. If I could counter them and talk to them, I would be very happy to do that. Obviously, you know, Rupert Murdoch has opened up a door where then anyone who does anything from any faith or race or even gender, perhaps, that we're all somehow united and responsible for that. And it's funny for a conservative to say that, who talks so much about personal responsibility, such a tenet of the conservative philosophy, that you don't blame society, you blame the person for doing something wrong. Well, Rupert Murdoch has flipped that around, where it would be in the face of someone like Ronald Reagan, who he probably says that he admires a great deal, but Ronald Reagan always said, you don't blame society, you blame the person for the sins that they commit. So it's ridiculous. But let's be honest, and I wrote about it for the Daily Beast, most of the victims of Islamic terrorism are Muslims. And I don't mean like 50%. I mean 85 to 95%, according to U.S. State Department study. Every day there are Muslims being slaughtered by ISIS in the Middle East. That doesn't get any coverage here, and I really wish it would, so we could understand that it's not Islam versus the West. It's ISIS versus everybody. It's Al-Qaeda versus everyone who doesn't agree to them. It's not convert to Islam or die, or submit to Islam. It's submit to ISIS or die, or submit to Al-Qaeda or die. And that's really what the stakes are here. It's a clash of civilizations, but not, like some on the right would say, between the West and Islam. It's internally between ISIS and mainstream Muslims. And unfortunately, mainstream Muslims are getting slaughtered daily by ISIS.
And it's not a matter of people like yourself not speaking out about it. It's a matter of your voice doesn't often get heard loudly enough.
We're trying. Yeah, and we learned very well that if our fellow Americans don't hear Muslims denounce it, for some reason they will believe that we agree with this garbage. Part of our challenge is that we're only about 1% to 2% of this country. Most Americans, according to a survey this summer, 62% don't have any Muslim friends. They don't know any Muslims. I'm volunteering to be anyone's Muslim friend out there who's listening. I will be your friend. I'm not going to help you move. I'm not going to drive you to the airport. But I'm there to answer your questions on Twitter or on Facebook. Because if you don't have that human counterbalance, and I cannot blame the average American, if you don't know any Muslims and all you see is this drumbeat of negative images of Boko Haram, of Al-Qaeda, of ISIS, the Boston Marathon bombing, I would not feel warmly toward Muslims myself, frankly. But if you have a friend who's a Muslim, and those people see Muslims in a more positive light, because they start to make the understanding that, hey, my friend's the normal Muslim. These other bad guys are the exception, not the other way around, where, boy, everyone's crazy. Oh, this one guy seems okay. You know, like, this is what we're up against. We have small numbers, and the media is not always that embracing.
Do you feel like you're being lumped into a group here as if all Christians were lumped in with the Klan?
Right.
Because they light crosses on fire, and, you know, same thing. Oh, well, why aren't Christians coming out and saying we have problems with the Klan? Do you think?
I agree with you, and I have an article for the Daily Beast coming out tomorrow about that idea that people say, you know, not all Muslims are terrorists, but all terrorists are Muslims, and breaking down statistics for people, and how part of it is the media's burden. I mean, in the European Union, in the last 5 years, of all the terrorist attacks that have taken place on the European soil, 2% were committed by Muslims, and that's by Europol. That's like Interpol, but the European version. That's their own report that just came out last year, 2%. 98%, almost all of them, are separatist actions, anarchist actions. They've killed people. That doesn't get the media coverage, and part of it is that this is such a when you talk about Muslim terrorism, it becomes good versus evil, and it plays well. It gets ratings and eyeballs, so the media continues to feed that. And they don't talk about the story as much when it's in America. Like, one of every five abortion clinics has been a victim of some kind of violence, either vandalism, firebombing, even murders. You don't hear the term Christian terrorist used in our media, even though this is happening yearly in America. And if we did hear terrorism used for others than not just Muslims, I think then we have an understanding that it's not limited to Muslims. There are Buddhist terrorists, which I wrote about in my article. There are Jewish terrorists, which the State Department has talked about, some settlers in the West Bank. There are Christian terrorists. There are Muslim terrorists. We don't own it. We didn't invent it. And there's just a teeny percentage of Muslims doing it.
All of that said, these cartoons are pretty tasteless, aren't they? Not offensive, because we've already said you can't offend us because of what we do for a living, but we can at least look at them and go, all right, that's a little over the line.
Well, to me, the best form of satire is when you're making a point to try to effectuate change, such as like The Daily Show or Colbert. When they're doing comedy about people in power and mocking them, we're all laughing, and even if it goes over the line, you're doing it to say their views are so ridiculous it sheds some light on it. When you're just being provocative, provocative's sake, I defend it. You can do it. I just don't think it's the highest form of satire. I don't think it's that impressive to me. I can go out there and say ridiculous things on stage that are horrible to people in the audience. I've done nothing. I've accomplished nothing. But if I talk about the policies of an administration or a senator's comments or a member of the House's comments or someone running for president and mock them in a way which makes people say, like, boy, those views really are crazy, and maybe it has an impact on an issue perhaps that I care about, to me that's much more important, and it should be much more applauded. That's the highest form of comedy in my mind.
Last thing I've got to ask you about here, your thoughts on hashtag activism, because over the last 10 days, a lot of people have changed their Twitter picture or their Facebook icon to the cover of the magazine, or they've used the hashtag Je suis Charlie, which reminds me so much of Kony 2012. A couple of years ago, which, as you know, did absolutely nothing. Is this just people trying to make themselves feel better? I'm part of this. I can't do anything, but at least I can pretend that I'm doing something.
You know, some people have said that, and I've actually written an article for CNN, I think, last year about this. I actually take the other side to it. My view is anything that gets people involved and engaged in an issue, that's their entry point into becoming an activist. So I embrace that, and I applaud them for doing that first step. If that's all they do, well, you know, maybe it's raised awareness to a few people, and on some level that's pretty good. But for some of these people, it will be their first stop on a hopefully a journey to get more involved in an issue, to get involved in organizations, whatever the issue might be. Maybe, you know, write a letter to the editor, maybe get involved in politics, maybe get involved grassroots on a campaign to make a difference. So you can poo-poo it. I can see people doing that. I understand that. I look at the other way, and I say I embrace it. I applaud it. I think it's your first step. And sometimes that first step is the hardest one. Like, how do I get involved? How do I make a difference? And you post it, and like five of your friends change their profile photo, and you feel good about yourself. You're like, you know, I should really do more about this issue. So I think it's a great step, because most people don't do anything.
Right.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
They live in their own world. Their worlds are busy. They have families to support. They don't have the time, or they just don't care.
Well, now I'm up to the hashtag Je suis out of time.
But out of time, Je suis out of time. I liked it. Well, it was very nice chatting. Thanks for having me on, Paul. I hope people check out Dave Sirius XM. It starts this Saturday, 10 a.m. to noon live on Channel 121 on New York Time. It's called The Dino Bidala Show, and it's the first show they've ever done. It's from the Muslim American point of view on issues of the week.
Well, I also know you've got a thing Sunday night in New York with a whole bunch of what you call Muslim and brown comedians who are going to do some stand-up comedy for freedom of expression. And I think you're a terrific voice on all of this, and I appreciate you joining me here today.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Dino Bidala here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.